Welcome to Clinical Conversations, a Journal Watch podcast. It's for the week ending May 14th, and this is podcast number 87. I'm Joe Elia. This time we have a repeat of a popular interview from late last year on changing your approach to pharyngitis in adolescents and young adults. The repeat is necessary because an interview that we had planned fell through. Sorry for that, but I think you'll enjoy this interview if you haven't heard it before. For links to earlier offerings, go to podcasts.jwatch.org, and for a detailed look at what's new in clinical medicine, just aim your browser at jwatch.org. That's J-W-A-T-C-H. We start with a summary of the week's top clinical news. The week started with a Jeremiad in the Archives of Internal Medicine about proton pump inhibitors and their gross overprescription. It turns out that PPIs are associated with a twofold increase in the risk for C. diff infections among inpatients. An editorialist points out that for most patients, the drug's adverse effects outweigh their benefits. Next, the FDA wants you to be able to spot misleading drug ads. It's launching what it calls the Bad Ad Program to educate clinicians on the warning signs of misleading drug promotions and to give them a way to report offenders. The link to the Bad Ad Program is on our website. Next, JAMA reported this week that once-yearly doses of vitamin D, meant to increase compliance for older women at risk, actually increase the risk for falls and fractures in that group. No one knows why. One theory is that the added vitamin D energizes patients enough to get them out and moving and falling down. Finally this week, cord blood pH, especially low values, can signal major adverse outcomes in neonates, things like seizures, cerebral palsy, and even death. A BMJ meta-analysis that included nearly 500,000 infants recommends increased surveillance in low pH babies, but no changes yet from current guidelines. That's it for the news. Now on to the interview. You're listening to Clinical Conversations. This week's Annals of Internal Medicine carries a strong recommendation from a respected voice. Dr. Robert Senter urges that clinicians change their approach to acute pharyngitis in adolescents and young adults. Why the change? The current approach, formulated in the 1950s, seeks to avoid rheumatic fever caused by group A beta hemolytic strep. However, it's now realized that another organism, Fusobacterium necrophorum, is just as likely to cause acute pharyngitis as beta hemolytic strep is. And what's worse, Fusobacterium carries a more severe complication, Lemierre syndrome. To sort all this out, we've invited Dr. Senter in for a conversation. He's professor of internal medicine at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. Welcome, Dr. Senter. What propelled this recommendation? Have you and your residents been seeing cases of Lemierre syndrome more often?
No, although we have seen a couple in the last year. It's a very rare syndrome, but it's less rare than acute rheumatic fever. We don't really know how rare it is because we have no U.S. epidemiologic data. What propelled me was a growing awareness of the literature about Lemierre syndrome and Fusobacterium necrophorum pharyngitis.
And so you've been reading a lot of the literature about it. I'm trying to get to the moment of discovery. When did you realize, my goodness, we have to change the paradigm?
So this is a bit of a long story. I write a medical blog, and in 2002, I was going through a variety of news websites, came across a report from the BBC that came out of the National Health Service that suggested there was an increase in Lemierre syndrome in Great Britain and attributed that to decreasing use of antibiotics empirically for pharyngitis.
Uh-huh.
I wrote about it. I sort of forgot about it for the next 3 or 4 years. It was in my mind, but Lemierre syndrome is a very unusual syndrome. I'd never seen it. I hadn't even heard about it until the 1990s, even though I'd been doing sore throat work since the early 1980s. And then in 2006, I got an email from the mother of a college student who had Lemaire syndrome, who had a brain abscess, had to have surgery, and had recovered. And she beseeched me to take further interest in this disease. She had set up a support group on Yahoo and started feeding me stories of people and newspaper articles of teenagers and college students who had this syndrome. So I felt it was my obligation to learn more about it, so I started going to PubMed and collecting all the information I could on the Lemaire syndrome as well as Fusobacterium. Parallel to this, there started to be articles, I think the first ones in 2004, that showed that Fusobacterium necrophorum caused endemic pharyngitis in teenagers and young adults. Now, it's very important here. This syndrome caused by pharyngitis does not occur before adolescence. It occurs with decreasing frequency after about the age of 25. It does occur as you get older, but the big group is between 15 and 25. Then there were finally a couple of epidemiological studies that were published, the most recent in 2008 from Denmark. There are researchers in Denmark who became very interested in this bacteria, and they did a prospective study of Lemaire syndrome in the country of Denmark. So they were able to capture all of the lab data from the entire country and all the clinical data. And what they were able to show was that rather than the estimate that they had found in a retrospective study of 1 in a million developing Lemaire's, they found that for this at-risk age group, the 15 to 25 age group, that it's actually 14.4 in a million, and if you do the division, that's 1 in 70,000 adolescent young adults. I thought to myself, that's like a large state university is going to have one student each year who's going to have Lemaire syndrome.
Right.
Now, that's rare. That's very rare, but you then have to look at how devastating Lemaire syndrome is.
And
it causes ICU admissions, and it causes a death rate of about 5%.
Right. Let's talk about Lemaire syndrome because it is so rare. You say that the way to spot it in this age group is when pharyngitis doesn't improve as it normally does within 4 to 5 days. Things get worse, the patient gets some swelling, shows signs of bacteremia. That's when you're saying you should suspect it and then act quickly and empirically to treat it. Is that right?
Absolutely. If you read case reports, if you go back and read the article that Dr. Lemaire wrote in 1936, it's a classic story. And I actually talked to the mother of a young lady who's recovering from Lemaire's just yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
She had a sore throat. She got better. On about the fourth or fifth day, she started getting worse. The sore throat recurred. She developed neck swelling. She developed high fevers. And then she started developing the other symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
This story recurs time and time again, that they get better and then they get worse. And people tell them, oh, it's just a sore throat. You'll get better, just wait it out. And when the patient is getting worse and has one of the things I wrote in the article, they have unilateral neck swelling, you need to figure out, is it Lemaire's or peritonsillar abscess? Or if they have bacteremic symptoms, and the specific ones that you see over and over again are rigors, night sweats, or high fevers, and I'll define high fever as 102 Fahrenheit or above.
Mm-hmm.
When that occurs on the fourth or fifth day, I would admit the patient, put them on IV antibiotics while you're waiting for the blood cultures to come back, get a CT scan of the neck to look for clot, because Lemaire syndrome starts with an internal jugular vein, infected thrombophlebitis, and it kills and injures by throwing metastatic infections off that thrombophlebitis, most commonly in the lung, but also sometimes the brain and sometimes the joints.
And you make a recommendation about which antibiotics, as a matter of fact, you say, to avoid one, to avoid the macrolides, you say.
Right. So there are two issues here. First is when you first see someone with pharyngitis in this age group, and this has nothing to do with kids before adolescence, but if you're in the adolescent, young adult, college student age group, then if you know they have strep, then you can use a penicillin or you could use a macrolide. If you if you're deciding to treat empirically, then you should not use a macrolide. I've heard too many cases of people who were put on a Z-Pak for their pharyngitis that was not strep, and macrolides, Z-Pak and erythromycin, do not cover at all Fusobacterium necroform. Penicillin covers much of it, but occasionally someone gets penicillin or amoxicillin and still develops Lemaire's syndrome. So it's not a perfect treatment, and you still have to watch out for the development. That's what I'm preaching. What I'm preaching is I'm really not concerned what you do the first 4 days. When the patient's getting sicker, it's not just a sore throat. It's something much more serious.
What's the reaction of your colleagues been to your advice now?
Well, I've given this as a talk about 10 times around the country over the last year and a half while I was in the preparation of writing this article. Almost every time that I give the talk, somebody comes up to me and or several people come up to me and tell me about patients they've seen. And they've been very positive at the explicit advice that I'm giving.
Now, are you, you're not doing research in Fusobacterium yourself, are you?
I am not. I hope to figure out a way to do a prospective study to figure out how they present initially with sore throats. My dream is that we would have something like a rapid test, so when a teenager comes with a sore throat, you check for strep, you check for Fusobacterium. If it's Fusobacterium, then you would treat them to treat that infection to prevent it from becoming more serious. But that's a dream I have right now.
I forgot to tell you
what to do if they if we're going to start antibiotics, what antibiotics to start.
Okay, go ahead.
So if you suspect that they might actually have early Lemaire's or that they have this bacteremia, there are two recommendations that most experts make right now. Either a combination of penicillin metronidazole or clindamycin. Some people have used piptazo, and that probably would cover it also. But I would stick to penicillin metronidazole or clindamycin. The patient that I saw that I took care of, who fortunately we caught before he developed the clot, but group Fusobacterium necroform, and had severe exudative tonsillitis, we treated with clindamycin with a great response.
It's good advice. Well, I'm interested in seeing how whether this gets incorporated into the recommendations. I'm assuming that it will be. You're a clinician of some reputation, and how quickly people start incorporating it and. Our listeners will be among the early adopters, I hope. And I want to thank you, Dr. Center, for your time with us today.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
You can reach Clinical Conversations at 1-617-440-4374. Earlier podcasts are all available at podcasts.jwatch.org, where links for all the news stories are also found. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Isidore Yano, and I'm Joe Elia. Thanks for listening, and join us next time.